Show.
Welcome to the show. I'm Luther Stidham, your host. First of all, if the quality sounds horrible, I must apologize. My main computer I use crashed, so I had to jump into a backup at the last second. So I'm running everything right now. I usually use two computers, one for the server connect and another one for running all my noise.
Right.
So the big one crashed. And it looks like it just come back up, so I don't know. It's too late now. I can't plug into it now, but it is what it is. So shoot me an email. Let me know how this quality sounds. I hope it's okay. I don't have any way of listening right now. The call-in number will be down since the server number is down. So no one will be able to call in, unfortunately. Right now, I want to introduce a guest that I have. His name is Mr. Kasim Pennington. I'm just going to let him talk about himself and tell me a little bit of what it is that he does, the program he has. If you remember, if you listened a few shows back, we had a guy by the name of Glenn Smith on that he was also an author, but he works down at the Mecklenburg County Jail, and I believe Mr. Kasim works with him. Am I saying that right, Kasim?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Definitely. All right. Well, go ahead, man. It's all yours. Tell us what you do and tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. My name is Kasim Pennington, and I am the founder and president of a company that I started in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the company is called RPN. RPN stands for Recidivism Prevention Network, and what I do is, in collaboration with Glenn Smith, as well as other agencies, I offer men that are coming home from prison, as far as reentry, I offer them the opportunity to be around someone who understands and can definitely help keep them on the right path as far as structure and what's helped them succeed with reentering society, given the fact of the recidivism rate. The actual word recidivism is pretty much, for those who are not aware, it's pretty much a word to describe the returning ratio of men that are released from prison. And the recidivism rate in many cities and many countries and many states constantly repeats itself. It's like a hamster wheel. They run and run and run, and they're constantly in the same place, back in jail, back in prison.
Why do you think that is?
It's a cycle. It's a way of life. It's a way of thinking that is created. Oh, and by the way, I personally was incarcerated for 9.5 years for cocaine distribution. So with me being incarcerated personally, I learned from my own personal experiences, and I learned from watching very wise men that were around me when it came to understanding what my job was once I was released.
Yeah, I myself spent 54 months in North Carolina's prison.
Okay.
I was processed at PCI. I went from there to what we called the holding tank in Hoke. Spent, I don't know, a couple months there. Shipped to Lincoln County. Spent about 6 months there. Made my greens. And then spent 4 years in Gaston Correctional. My opinion personally is a part of men and women in this case too becoming recidivists is also due to the fact of there are a lot of employers who have this issue with hiring felons or people of that nature. There's a type of organization going on. There's a campaign. It's called Ban the Box campaign. I'm a big supporter of that. The little question that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And I personally, I feel that, you know, that shouldn't be something that's universal. It shouldn't be something that every individual has to answer to that question. You know, that there are states that have banned that box on the application, and then once they make an offer, they can actually run a background check. But they have to prove where the crime or the conviction would have a direct conflict with the employment. And in those particular states, the recidivist rate has dropped tremendously.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure that would definitely be the case. But dealing with recidivism, as far as right now, what I see a large number of men, as well as women, but mostly men, I see a large number of them come home from being incarcerated for many years. And when they realize that all of the dreams and all of the plans would not work as quickly as they wanted them to work, when they realize that all of the planning and all of the writing and all of the studying that they had done while they were incarcerated was really being put to the test, many of them, when they receive a no, many of the individuals cannot come back from a no. And that's the thing that I've been able to pinpoint and speak about and see in many individuals, is things don't go the way that you want them to go when you come home. Once you've been released, you have to understand that everything comes with being patient. Not only being patient, but understanding how to forgive and how to be able to look at life and be blessed with knowing that I just had my boxers and my socks next to my ketchup, mustard, and my meats, you know, while you're incarcerated. That's how life is. It's like your food and everything is right with your underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And that reality that people soon forget once they're released, it is crippling. And as a number of people grow, I'm not sure. Do you know the actual? Let me ask you this, because I don't know the actual numbers as up to date. But how many felons are there in America?
That I don't even have a clue where to begin. I would imagine, I thought one time I heard 33%, but I know that's extremely too low.
I've heard many numbers, and my question to anyone is, if you have a felon, imagine how the family is affected by the felon. Being incarcerated, and after incarceration, coming home and having to readjust, and the family has to readjust to being transformed by the charges and transformed by him becoming a felon, so to speak.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Those families are absorbing so much pain. Those families are absorbing so much of what we ignored while we were doing our time. We ignore it while we're doing time. But to actually address a felon, you also have to address the felon's family.
Right, yeah,
because everyone is affected by him being stamped as a felon.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation regarding felon, like I tell many people, it's a discrimination. It's a discrimination beyond a discrimination. Years ago, if you used a certain words to debase a group of people, you know, if you use the term homosexual, years ago people would be like, shh, don't say that word. But now it's like, when you say the word homosexual, you have a discrimination issue. But at the same time, they don't use that aspect when they're dealing with felons, and the turnaround from dealing with felons is just the same. We're being discriminated against. And right, just how you have the people that are in San Francisco that say, you know, we want to be married. They were the first ones to actually say gay marriages is something that we want to fight for. And this is discrimination. And they won. But when you turn around and you say, hey, I'm being discriminated against because of my past, and I've gained so many great things since then, but you're still going to punish me for that, you're also punishing my family.
You know, when I was doing my time in Gaston County, 4 years, I was the HRD. I know you're familiar with that, or that some they call it PET. Some prisons call it PET.
What is it?
Pre-employment training.
Okay.
Or human resource development. Okay. I was the instructor's assistant for 4 years doing that. So I did a lot of interviews with inmates getting ready to rotate back to the free world. Interviews as far as job interviews. Also assisted, I don't know, 1,000 or better resumes.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy, my instructor, the professor, I guess you could say, of the class, said something about someone's past one time, and it's kind of made a lot of sense, and I've used it several times. If you've got one leg in the past, and you got one leg in the future, then what are you doing? You're pissing on the present. So my point is this. As a felon, yes, when someone says, oh, you're a convicted felon, and then you're immediately branded as this horrible human being, you're so ungodly, you know, horrible and ugly and dangerous and everything else that surrounds the word, and that, you know, for a lot of individuals, that does just completely destroy their confidence to go out there and to do the right thing and to get that job, and they may have wholeheartedly want to do something like that, you know. But as an example, what I've talked several times on this radio show is when I got out and I had to go and immediately find myself a job. One of the hardest things I thought I was going to encounter was finding a job. That being said, even though I had in the back of my mind that I had just spent the last 4 years trying to tell inmates how to overcome that horrible question of what you were convicted of. So I just decided to hit it straight off the bat. That was one of the first things I attacked.
Right.
And I got out March 21st, 2013. May the 2nd, I had a job. I'm still there today. And it was because I was persistent and I wouldn't take no for an answer. And I didn't hide the fact that I had been in prison. They asked, I told them, or I knew it was going to come up, so I hid it right off the bat. And even today, with me writing my book and having the radio show, anybody can very easily Google search my name and find out about me, who I am, what I'm doing. And sometimes I get, even when I'm in my shop, I get the, oh, you're a convicted felon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am. So what's the point? You know, that's my response back. Yes, I am. So what's the point? I find that give me 5 minutes and I can turn your opinion around about that, about who the media or the court systems would like to brand me as. That's why my book is titled the way it is, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded. And believe it or not a whole lot of people know this, but the name of that book was voted on by about 3,000 inmates. A lot of inmates coming through the prison, my prison, where I was at. I did a lot of testing, different names, mm-hmm. and each time that name won out.
I wanted to ask you, could you pull up online the definition of felon? Because I know that the definition of felon doesn't describe me. It doesn't describe any of the individuals who mentored me throughout my time in the university of life. I want to see the definition of the word felon. And my phone may be almost dead, but at the same time, the last time I checked the word or the definition of felon, the definition of felon was murderer, rapist, all types of just like, the word didn't describe me, and the word didn't describe many of the men that I have had the opportunity to meet throughout my 9.5 years while I was incarcerated. And I was able to learn from a lot of men, and all of those men that I learned from have come home and been successful. Many of them have went back into lives of crime as well and went back to prison. over and over again.
Right.
And it's like, I've been able to bless others through what I've learned regarding staying free and how to remain free. And that's been the focus of RPN. That's been the focus with Life Connections, the organization that I go inside of the jails and operate with throughout a week-to-week basis. And I'm teaching the youth offenders in the jails, which there are a large number of youth offenders in Charlotte Mecklenburg jails that are returning offenders as well in the juvenile cycle. And that will create a full adult cycle of going in and out of jail with a 5-year probation that they give a 16-year-old here in Mecklenburg County, excuse me. But at the same time, I also have had the opportunity to work with a lot of men that are currently incarcerated in the jails, and I teach them parenting classes as well as life skills and life connections moniker as far as the blueprint or the B-print. So I'm in the jails active helping men and understanding one thing, that we can't let that word felon destroy the growth that you actually accumulated while incarcerated.
Gotcha. We're going to take a break real quick, just in case you've joined us. We are speaking with Kasim Pennington, and he is, again, say the name of your organization.
Recidivism Prevention Network.
And this show is sponsored by MofoBooks.com. If you have not already, make sure you pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded. It is available worldwide at all bookstores as well as on Amazon. Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's MOFObooks.com. Again, I want to remind everybody, if you're just joining us and the audio sounds extremely horrible, my server, I usually log on with two computers. I have one I use to log on directly to the radio station. It crashed this morning, so I had to go to my backup within the last few minutes, literally the last few minutes before the show. You may have even heard Mr. Kasim and myself doing a little late audio testing. It looks like it's back up. I'm not sure. It doesn't look like it wants to respond too well. So, all right, we are talking with Mr. Kasim Pennington. He is the president and founder of RPN. Again, tell us the name of that.
It's Recidivism Prevention Network.
Okay, and you work a lot in you work a lot with Glenn Smith within the Mecklenburg jail system, right?
Correct.
Do you also travel to other jails?
Yes, I've actually been to the Hulk institution that you were speaking of as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's pretty neat.
Yep.
I have not got into doing any of that, you know, mm-hmm. yet. I would like to. That's something I'd like to do. Travel around to, I think Glenn's maybe going to possibly work something out. I don't know. I was invited to New York City to speak with... let me back that up. Someone asked me if I would be interested in going. It's not really an invite. I think they have to speak with this individual. He's a former federal prosecutor. He's also written a book. Has kind of come clean, I guess you can say. And he also has a radio show. I'm not sure which one it is. I don't know if he's like mine, internet radio show, or if he actually is on a local station or something. But a young lady asked me about that. She, her name is... Well, I don't have her permission to say her name, but she took a bunch of books with her to New York City and a bunch of my books and was going to hand them out. They were review copies, so there were a few mistakes in them. And if you haven't picked up a copy, again, make sure you pick up a copy of the book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, because I do a lot of reference here on this radio show. And if you've listened the last few several weeks, I've actually played some recordings, telephone recordings that I have. I have... recordings of the case file. Last week I played really 2 weeks in a row, where an SBI agent, Kasim, is interviewing the individual that accused me of what I went to prison for. This young female, he had found child pornographic images on her computer. And actually, you know what? Let's just do this. I know there are a lot of people out here that listened last week. We were actually overloaded last week. We had so many listeners that my server was locking up. Not mine. Listen to my radio server was locking up. I can get up to 5,000 listeners without interruption in the audio, and it was freezing. So that's good news.
Yeah.
Let me find that file real quick. We'll just go ahead and play that, and I'll let you hear it for yourself. This is amazing what you're going to hear. Now, the individual talking here is going to be, his name is going to be Charles L. Gint. He's a former special agent for North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation. All right. And then you're going to hear a young female's voice. Her name is Brandy Lewis. She's in one of the characters in my book. And then you're going to hear two females. I'll try to identify without destroying the audio. But you're going to hear one of the deputies speak up as well. Let me play this for you.
Did y'all print out that whole conversation with anything?
I found where I couldn't find the file. I checked both hard drives. I found where it had been opened recently.
Right there, they're talking about child pornographic images that they found of herself that she was sending to her boyfriend, Buddy.
Deleted, but most of the stuff relating to that I have been on there. I can see where that file was there. That doesn't mean it's over with. We have some other methods we can go back in and delete stuff.
I'm going to stop it there. Did you just hear what he just said?
Mm-hmm.
What did he say?
He said, we have ways to delete stuff.
We have ways of going back in and deleting stuff. So he is actually offering to delete child pornographic images from this girl's computer that accused me of rape and got me sent to prison for 4.5 years. So let's back it up a tad bit and play it again.
I mean, it's over with. We have some other methods we can go back in and delete stuff.
Darlene said she was going to delete everything off my computer because I didn't need it anymore. So I asked her not to.
How recent was it open? Yeah, I don't remember the exact days. I mean, it was a short time recently. I don't check. But that's probably, we think it's somebody that probably deleted some stuff, you know.
That's what he was talking about. He says nothing illegal, but I'm sorry if a 10-year-old child, if a 5-year-old child takes pornographic images of themselves and they store it or print it, is child pornography. Possession of child pornography knows no exceptions.
Wow.
State or federal. So you just heard that. Probably some embarrassing stuff. That's what he said. And then here's what he says about the other stuff he's found.
Yeah.
Not just yours, but other people in the family. I've been looking at, you know.
Did you hear that? Not just yours, but other people in the family. Now he's talking about bestiality images that he found on the computer.
The point is, we're going to have to go back through and look. I mean, we got some stuff that can hopefully dig deeper in there and can pull some things up. That's just something else we'll deal with down the line. You got a word in
there.
Now, this is a North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation special agent that we're talking about, mm-hmm. who's offering to hide child pornographic images for his alleged victim. So now let's jump in. And well, whose computer does this belong to? Well, don't take my word for it. Take this one.
You say, if you remember when you saved that file, the ABC. Do you remember like the hard drive that it was on? Did you know there was two hard drives on the computer?
Oh, I know,
under
my documents.
Now under my documents, you have to log into that computer when you log in. When you boot it up, do you log in under your name or do you log in under someone else's?
My dad's.
You log in under your dad's.
It says
dad's.
Johnny Lewis and makes their password.
Okay, so we'll be under his.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, the girl talking is Brandy Lewis, the character in the book, the main character. And the agent, I'll play it back, but the agent just asked her, when you log into that computer, whose name do you log into? She says my name, or she says my dad's. She then says his name out loud. So let me back it up just a little bit and let you hear it again.
She says John Lewis and makes their password.
It's not far enough.
You log into your name or do you log into something else's?
My dad's.
You log into your dad's.
Says John Lewis and makes their password.
So when you enter his?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was there when I lived. Because I read it that night.
Did you leave it up?
Nope.
Are you playing with your computer?
Nope.
Did you ever tell him that it was on the computer?
No. I don't know what Dad talked to Luke about, because when I was getting the ambulance, they were staying in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Dad told Luke told Dad how she'd been stopping him. Dad allowed him to go on his computer and start probably digging around and stuff. I don't know that my documents, because he could have got through that without your password.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anybody could. Mm-hmm. If my computer was on, then they'd get anything they wanted to. What about with your MySpace? They didn't
have my password, and they'd never guess that. I think my mom tried. Mm-hmm. All right, I know we've kind of ventured off the actual program, but my point would be that I kind of prepared several people a few shows back what I was going to play, and I got a ton of emails through injusticeradio@gmail.com. about playing those particular files. And then I also have some files where Cabarrus County Probation Parole individuals repeatedly call me about 4:30 in the morning a lot. They used to do it quite often and tell me to get up and walk around, because this bracelet that I wear, they say it reports no movement. And eventually I finally got smart, downloaded an app for my phone, and started recording these individuals calling me. Now, I'm not going to get into that on this show.
Right.
But I've been talking about that for a while, too.
You got it rough, man. That's all I can say is you got it rough.
Well, a lot of people, I had a guy by the name of Jason that was on here. He's a big conspiracy theorist, and he actually dubbed the radio station Rebel Radio himself, you know, and, you know, maybe that's what it is, but this show is designed to expose my story and help individuals expose their story, as well as interview other authors and individuals like yourself that are trying to help out to make some type of positive impact on society.
What I encountered once I was released from my incarceration was that while incarcerated, I picked up many gifts and many talents and kind of dusted, buffed them off and shined them up to where I had talents that I was unaware of before incarceration. But once I was incarcerated, they were awakened. And throughout my incarceration, I wrote music. I was a songwriter. And before I knew it, I was singing the same songs that I was writing. And when I was released from prison, I had over 700 songs written.
Wow.
These 700 songs are pretty much my legacy, and everything that I went through, everything that I experienced, I put it in writing, in song form. And I've written over, to this date, over 800 songs. So once I was released under the impression that I was about to sign a deal and make some major recording successes, so to speak. And once I was released from prison, I did concerts, I did tours, I did performances, I did recordings. I worked with some great names in the music industry, and I've been amongst the best of the music industry as well. And I took what I learned while I was incarcerated, which was music and writing, and now I've used this as a way to cope with stress while incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
So I teach people that are incarcerated ways to deal with the stress of being incarcerated through music, because I found music calms a savage beast. And that's what it's been for me. And I stand behind it, and I teach I teach with the high school students here, in Mecklenburg County. I do a class in the summertime where I teach the young men how to write music and how to use poetry as a way to express themselves beyond just the violent fist and fighting over in West Charlotte High School.
Mm-hmm. Wow, sounds pretty neat. Where did you do most of your time at? Right here in North Carolina?
No, I was in the federal system.
Okay.
I was in the federal system in the Mid-Atlantic region in Southern District of Ohio, where I was released to, unfortunately. And I did time all over, man. I did federal time, so they don't let you sit too long in one hotel before you get another spot somewhere else. So I was in Beckley, West Virginia. I was in Morgantown, West Virginia. I was in Lexington, Kentucky. I was in Ashland, Kentucky. I was in Atlanta. I was in Terre Haute, USP. I was in about six different prisons, six different institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout that time, I learned a lot. Not only did I learn a lot, but like I told you, I came home to the music industry. I came home to everything that I wanted to see, everything that I wanted to be a part of. And I realized as time went on, through all of the craziness of the music industry and the craziness of life, I realized that my family meant more to me than just the music. I love music, and I couldn't put them both on the scale of family and music, but music has been my life for the past 15 years, and it's not going anywhere. It's a passion that I have, and now I've used it and implemented it into the judicial system, working with the youth offenders, as well as working with the men that are currently incarcerated, and just teaching them what has helped me succeed. And it's more of a story of, I'm not going to just tell you something that I read in a book. I'm going to show you something that I've done in my life that has actually worked for me. And a lot of people don't see that. It's like you have a textbook education regarding drug experience, but you've never used drugs. So you have a textbook's understanding of jail and prison, but you've never been to prison. And it's like, until a person can deal and connect with someone that has experience with their experience, it's like you got the Charlie Brown teacher in your ears. Just right. Womp, 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 womp. It's like that type of situation. But I sympathize with you, man, regarding your situation 100%. And working with Glenn over at Life Connections, I've learned to pretty much absorb and watch and listen as a student. And I've been in the leadership positions, but now I'm learning from a man who's been working this system of helping people with self-improvement in Charlotte in the Mecklenburg area. He's been doing this for about 17 years strong. And one thing that I really enjoy about him is how he puts everything on you. Everything is on you, man. Why would that person upset you? This is you we're talking about. You let this person shift your thinking. You let this person upset your day. What gives them that power? You give them that power. So it's like, now I look at things and I gotta say to myself, it's like, man, certain things that we've experienced as far as in our lives, behind every man is a story. And I commend you on your story, because you put your story into a book. And it's like, once you solidify that and once you back your brand, then nothing can come from it but success. So I definitely commend you on it, because behind every man is a story. But who can actually sit down and say, I've written my story out? You put yours in a book form. I put mine in a music form.
Yeah, you were saying that's how you got through, you know, a lot of your time. That was how I got through my time, was writing. I wrote for myself. I wrote for other people. I did a lot of jailhouse lawyer type work. Helped free a couple over sentenced. I did spend a lot of my time writing resumes for, that was kind of my hustle on the side, was writing the resumes for individuals, kind of sprucing them up. I even was a tax preparer, for a little bit. So I spent most of my time writing or in class, And then I got the benefit of seeing Glenn Smith and then other guest speakers. He came out once every course, and the course was 9 weeks. And so, I had to have seen him. He come out, I don't know, 9, 10 times, I'm guessing, through the course of all the time I was there. And I got to know him pretty well. And Glenn's a good guy, man. I really like what he does. I like what he does at the jail. Well, I've never been there, not to Mecklenburg County Jail.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, now back up. I was there when I was about 16 years old, but I don't think it was the same thing. I was there all of about 4 hours when I was 16. I didn't go to jail. They put me in a holding cell. Then my mom come pick me up, my poor mom.
It's interesting that you say you were a teenager, because one thing that I did not realize when I originally moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, was that in the state of North Carolina as well as Texas, these are the only two states in the United States that charge a youth offender as an adult.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're in the class with me and they're like, I just got 24 years and they're 16.
Right.
There's only a certain amount of states that are taking a young life that made a mistake and making sure that they don't even see the light of day for the next 2-3 generations.
Well, I'll tell you this. From my experience and what I learned about North Carolina's state prison system, was that it is Lamar Pesar. He was the superintendent of Gaston. He retired, I think, in 2012-ish. I remember him walking through the GED building. I also did on Fridays. I was a GED tutor.
Okay.
He walked through, and I like to listen. I listen to these hot rods. I listen to them run their mouth about things going on in the prison, et cetera. And they talk, and I guess they forget that there's a lot of ears around them. But I heard him tell another guard that the prison industry in North Carolina was, at the time, $1.25 billion industry. You can publicly trade shares, stocks, as I think is what they call it, North Carolina's prison system. The profits that's made from, for example, tables that are made, I think they make them in Brown Creek. They make these metal tables, and they're made by the inmate. They're welded, put together, and the state then turns around and sells them to themselves.
$4,000.
Oh, more than that. Lamar Pacer, I walked through one time, and I listened to him. He pointed to my dorm, and he said, that dorm just cost me $10,000 to put tables in there. There were four tables in there. They put four metal tables. So if you do the math, that's $2,500 a piece. So I wrote that down, and that's actually going to be part of my second book called, it's going to be titled Prison Diaries. Mm-hmm. I wrote that down, $2,500, four tables, $10,000. So I did a little bit of research. I got lucky, and there were some welders that actually were coming through Gaston, where I was housed, and I got to question them. I'm like, how much do you think is involved in this? One of the welders said, well, I was paid $3 a day to weld the table, and they get the metal through the state's lowest bidder. So, and part of it's stainless steel. So if we imagine that they have... Let's be fair about it. Let's say they have $1,000, which I don't think they do. Let's say they have $1,000 in the making of these tables. And they then turn around and sell it to the prison, or rather they sell it to themselves for $2,500. So at being generous at $1,000, there's a $1,500 profit made, and that's going based solely on what I heard the superintendent say the table cost him. And then that $2,500 per table is passed on to now you and I and every other taxpayer listening to this show right now. So the bid's put in each year. Mm-hmm. All right, we need 10 tables, $2,500 a piece. But they know good and well the table's only going to cost them less than $1,000. And the way another prison guard described it to me was that as when they put in their bid or they put in their budget for the year and they come in under budget, that budget is split between the guards. I mean, between the prison personnel. Mm-hmm. They all get this hefty bonus. And I've got tons and tons of notes about stuff like that. But North Carolina's prison system is you know, it's overflowing with people that should not be in prison for the craziest things, the stupidest things, the smallest things, but it's all part of a business.
Well, yeah.
It is a business. And the day the inmate hits the front door into the jail, walks right in, the state gets a sum of money, both state and from federal.
Yes, sir.
So it's not beneficial to send people to prison.
It's not beneficial, and at the same time, the person is not hurt alone. The family is hurt as well. And if the family is hurt, then the community is hurt. And if the community is hurt, then that local city, that local town will feel the effects of how a community is hurt. Once one person goes to prison or goes to jail, that affects an entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And people ignore the fact that the families are the ones that suffer as well. And for a little girl whose father is incarcerated for his first offense and he's got to do 3 years and she's 5 years old, I mean, that's heartbreaking. That's the end of the world to a little girl at that age. But to be able to come out of that and speak about it, oh, they don't focus on that at all. But we can look at a war veteran or someone coming back with PTSD and recognize that and respect that. But we can't look at a family who has their father or their mother taken away for years and then they have to readjust. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
The effects of a person being incarcerated, the effects of a person repeating this cycle of going back and back and back, it has to be addressed. And when you look at the family is where everyone is ignoring the true elephant in the room, so to speak. It's like, man, the families are the ones who really got to feel this. I did time. I did 9.5 years of hard federal time. I don't know how hard federal time can be compared to a state budget, but I did 9.5 years. And the whole 9.5 years I was doing time, I would tell myself, I don't owe anybody anything. I done paid my dues. I'm good to go. I don't owe nobody. And sure enough, as soon as I come home, I owe everybody. And guess who I owe? Guess who I owe, man?
Your family.
My family. Because now the flip of the coin was in their face, and they looked at me and they said, you know what you owe me? And I said, what? And they said, to stay free. I said, good God Almighty, excuse me. I said, good God Almighty, now I owe you my freedom. And they like, yeah, we really want you to stay free and don't go back. And I said, that's a fair agreement between me and you.
Right.
And they said, well, it's going to be harder than you actually think. And sure enough, out of 10 of my friends, 2 or 3 of us have been without going back. 2 or 3 of us have made it being free without repeating or being given to the recidivism rate. That's what they teach you. They teach you that the recidivism rate is what you want to beat. Once you've been free 6 months, once you've been free 2 years, once you've been free 5 years, and about 7-8 years of being free, they say that you're going to stay free. But the average individual, once they're released from a county jail, they'll be back in that system within 30 days.
Yeah. I think the actual percentage is nearly 80%.
Yeah, for the fines. They're going to get you for the fines. You don't have money, we're coming to get you for the fines after you were bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, the individuals, the laws, everything can be, we can focus on the ban, the box. We can focus on all of the different things that they're doing regarding a felon. But at the same time, look who's being hurt. These people are more than just one. if we have 80 million felons, think of the families of 80 million felons, how they were affected, just like a person in war would be affected by PTSD.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com.
Welcome back. I'm Luther Stidham. I'm your host. We've got about 10 minutes left on the show. If you're just joining us, I hope you're not. I hope you've been listening to the show. Kind of changed the format here a little bit today. We're speaking with Mr. Kasim Pennington, and he is an individual who is trying to help other men and women, as well as the youth, stay out of prison, in a nutshell, just to make it all nice and in a language here we can all easily understand. The recidivist rate is something that needs to be addressed. I think President Obama right now is trying to do something about it, whether you like him or not. If you've been listening to what he said, he's talking about changing some time, reducing some prison rates, some prison sentences, I mean, because, if you're in prison for drugs, that's one thing, but if you are going to prison because you have, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 ounces and you're spending 10 years in prison, I think was kind of his point, was a bit pointless. You know, there are crimes that deserve a prison sentence, no doubt about it. But there are also some things where it doesn't deserve prison, and we're just dealing with that actually across the nation. You know, this nation right here that we have, called the United States of America, we have more people, let me see if I can say this right, more people incarcerated than the entire population of China, something like that. I mean, that may be a little exaggerated, but I know I'm pretty close. We have, I read not long ago, and I apologize, it's the numbers have eluded me right now, but we have... we have one of the largest prison population in the United States.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that should say something about somebody's obviously not doing nothing right, and it's certainly not the individuals, not solely their fault, the ones that are in prison. There is some blame there because they did commit a crime. However, if there's a program in prison and a program on the outside of prison when they get out, then we can certainly at least lower that rate tremendously.
I like to speak as far as to your audience. I would like to speak on behalf of the men that are coming home to these families. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The men that are being released and they're coming home to their families, and seeing so many before me make the mistake of putting their dreams and putting all of their plans and all of their aspirations into one thing, and then that lets them down. It's like once that lets them down, they turn around and go back to the same people, places, and things from before prison, or they turn around and start drinking again, or they turn around and start hanging with the wrong type of element because of defeat. And that's what I really, really stress to a lot of the individuals is, okay, what about when your plan A, B, and C does not work? A, B, and C might not work. You may get a job and they, like in my case, they fire you. They say, hey, you're a great employee, but at the same time, we look more intensively into your background and we have to let you go. And it's like, well, my background is from 10, 15 years ago. And they like, well, you know, we still got to let you go. Have a nice life. And that reality of falling and that reality of defeat once released from prison creates the recidivism rate, because many feel like they can't actually be free and succeed how they mentally have it in their mind. So they say to themselves, I'd rather go back and sit down and rethink this thing. Because you've got a bunch of men that ain't, they're not going to come out and stay free. You've seen it.
Yeah, I did. I was just sitting here thinking about that, too. We used to go through the lockup magazines, newspapers, and we'd go through there. We'd turn a page. Oh, I know that guy. He just got out. There he is. He's arrested again. Oh, I know that guy. I know that guy. That guy just left. That guy has been gone a year. I tell you what. There was this guy. We called him Bobo. Come through prison. He got out. And he was shipped. A year later, he comes shipped back. You know, and then he comes and he gets into my dorm. I'm like, you know, what's going on, man? You know, where you been? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, man, I done been out. Don't come back. Mm-hmm. I said, what? I said, why would you want to come back to this? And he said, I just slipped, man. I just slipped. And that's why did you slip? What was the real cause here? You know, why was there no more effort than what you put into it?
You know why?
Love for the game, maybe. No,
you look at the support. You look at the support systems that most men while incarcerated have. You do a long amount of time in prison, and you lose touch with those that you genuinely knew from before. Your family members are still the same, but at the same time, it's like you're older, they're older, everyone has lives, and you're coming home as who? Like, to the teenagers, it's like, man, I remember you as a baby. And it's like, now I'm a teenager.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people lose that focus, man. People lose that focus. And when you lose that focus, there is no coming back regarding what's important. And for me, I make a moniker, family tree over the money tree. And that's something that I live by, because I know that I can make a choice to focus on family, or I can make a choice to focus on money. But both trees create growth. The family tree, right, and the money tree create growth. But my thing was, well, I'm going to sit here and let my family tree grow stronger, because the roots are seeming really frail. And for me personally, that's been a voyage for me, and it's been a blessing to meet people such as Glenn and yourself that are speaking out about the injustices of the government, and in many situations, just case by case, in which you look at your book, it's a case, and that's sad, man. But you look at our system, you look at government, I mean, it's sad. We have a word that says free. And when I hear free, I get excited. The word is free. But then I get on the freeway, and it's not free. It's tickets. I sit there and say to myself, I'm free to do what I want to do. Because you said free. You're not free. There's a speed limit on free. So with there being a speed limit on free in America, you have to be willing to understand they're not playing fair at all.
All right, we've got about 4 minutes left here, so let me jump on this book real quick. Again, if you don't have a copy, pick up a copy of the book. It's titled Falsely Accused, Forever Branded. It was released April the 25th of this year, and in 1 week it went international. It is now available in every single bookstore around the world that uses Ingram Book Company as a distributor. It's available on Amazon, or as a last resort, you can get it through me. Visit my website, mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com. Click on the Contact Us and shoot me an email. And we will, well, actually, what you have to do is make a donation. Shoot me an email, and I'll get a signed copy and get it sent out to you. Now, what are we doing with the funds of the book? Good question. $10 will buy me two more books, and then everything else goes into a defense fund. there is a purpose behind this. There is a purpose in the book. The book is to get my story out and expose what Brunswick County Justice System did in my case. All the evidence they hid, all the evidence they conjured up, and the felonies that an SBI agent actually committed. So it is worth your while to pick the book up. I promise you that. Right now I've got about 40 copies of review copies left. Review copy simply just means there's going to be some mistakes in there. What you buy offline right now is mistake free. So if you want to shoot me an email, I'm going to start unloading these books as quick as I can for about $10 a piece. So if you'll go to mofobooks.com, make a donation of $10 or more, make sure you shoot me your name, address. I will sign a copy and get it sent out to you and get you some information about the radio show. And also make sure you, when you go to my website, make sure you click on the Sign Luther's Petition. If you have been listening, you're aware that I filed an appeal in 2010 based on lack of subject matter jurisdiction, where I refused to actually sign my plea. And the judge acknowledged it on the record, so therefore he stripped himself of jurisdiction, convicted me anyway. So I filed an appeal, notice of appeal, and Judge Olamay Lewis of Brunswick County, District 13, deliberately intercepted that notice. I have a recording from where my ex-wife called her and asked about where the plea was. I mean, asked where the notice of appeal was. She had her secretary, Tammy Pierce, call my wife back and left a message that we have recorded to this day, and I've played it, I think, last week, where she was not going to allow it to be addressed by the court, in her own words, but that's what it meant. So Ola Lewis intercepted that notice of appeal and will not allow it to get to the North Carolina Court of Appeals. It would have released me by 2011, because no matter how you look at it, if there is no plea agreement signed or bill of information signed in this case, then there is no conviction. So my conviction has been null and void since the day I was convicted, according to North Carolina Supreme Court. So go on there and make sure you sign that permission. And I need all the help I can get, the petition. And we're going to take a quick break, come back, then we're going to end the show.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com.
All right, we're getting ready to wrap it up here. I want to thank everyone for giving me and Mr. Kasim an hour of your time and to listen to us talk about things that should be talked about, and I hope you will shoot us an email. I'm sorry that you were unable to call in on the show, and especially if the audio quality was horrible, because the computer, my server crashed, the one I used to log into the radio show with. So I'm using my backup right now, trying to do everything on one computer. So again, if it sounds like crap, I apologize. I want to thank Mr. Kasim Pennington for coming on the show. One more time, Mr. Pennington, what is it that you do?
Recidivism Prevention Network, founder and president. You can also contact us online at www.nomorerisk.org. That's www.nomorerisk.org. And love to hear from you all. I appreciate your time as well as the listeners. And just give me a ring, man.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. And there will also, later on this evening, this show will be loaded as a podcast to mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com. Go to the Media Room tab, and far left of the screen, you will see the upload. And it's probably going to be something titled Injustice Radio with Kasim Pennington. Something to that effect. Either way, it'll be today's date. You'll see it.
Sounds good.
Thanks, man.
Peace.
You've just listened to another insane episode of Injustice Radio, sponsored by MofoBooks.com. I am your host, Luther Stillman. Don't forget to join us next week. And remember, America, this is your show.